Hey everyone, I'm Jason V, and this is Local Color. My guest today is Andre Maslin, and up until a few weeks ago, he was operations director for the Creative Alliance in East Baltimore, a position he's held for several years. Don't worry, he didn't get fired. Andre left his position to take the entrepreneurial leap and open his own cafe in Mount Vernon. What started as an email thread about renting space for a live show turned into this week's interview. Listen as we talk about his upbringing in Jamaica, culture shock when he came to the US, and how all of his life experiences have been leading up to this moment.
All right, cool, man. So how you doing today?
I'm good. It's great to be here with you. Thanks for having me down.
Yeah, sure, no problem. Do you guys live around here?
I live in Mount Vernon currently. Used to live in Fells Point.
What was living in Fells Point like?
It was nice. I'm going to keep it PC. It was nice.
How long have you been living in Mount Vernon for?
I've been in Mount Vernon for 2 years now.
And you're liking it?
Yeah, love it.
Cool.
Walkable. City vibe. I love it.
Nah, I got you. And are you still at the Creative Alliance?
I'm at the Creative Alliance until the end of March.
All right. Yep. Well, we'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
I read in the stuff that you gave me that you were born in Jamaica or were you raised there?
I was born in Jamaica and I lived there till I was 8 years old. And then I moved to Miami.
Okay, cool. Tell me what that was like.
Jamaica or Miami?
Both. Well, tell me about Jamaica and then... Also, you said that you went to school with, was it Ziggy Marley?
Yeah, so I lived in Montego Bay, Jamaica, and moved to Kingston, Jamaica, when I was probably around six, and went to school with Ziggy Marley. He's older than me. He's a little bit older than me, so we weren't friends. We weren't buddies. I'm not going to lie and say I was, you know, boys with Ziggy Marley, but we did attend the same school, and Bob Marley used to be there to pick him up and sit in the courtyard in Jamaica at that time in the 70s. You know, he was in his home, so he wasn't, you know, people weren't mobbing him. He was just, there's Bob.
Right.
Hanging out, you know, playing soccer, football, as we call it, yeah. Waiting for his kid to get out of school, just like all the other dads.
Did you ever interact with Ziggy at all? Like, or did you know him from school? Like, was he a bully? Was he nice?
Never interacted, and... Mm-hmm. Yeah, never interacted, and I don't think they were looked at as a big deal, you know.
They were just people from
another family from
yeah, Jamaica. Okay,
family.
Now tell me about. I'm sorry, and I just want to clarify. You were born in Jamaica.
Born in Jamaica, I came to the States to Miami when I was eight.
Okay, now what was coming to Miami like?
Can you say culture shock?
Yeah, tell me about that.
I mean, it's culture shock. So you're in Jamaica, your family, we're all family down there. So it's very familial. And everybody knows everybody. Teachers know your parents. Parents know the grocers and so on and so forth. Coming as a little kid to Miami, Florida, not used to American culture, American excess, American styles. I was the little foreign kid and got treated accordingly.
What was that treatment like?
Yeah, I was bullied. I was bullied a lot when I was a little kid. You know, I was the foreign kid with the weird accent.
I was going to ask you, because it seems like you still have a little bit of an accent.
Yeah, I think psychologically I pushed that out of me.
You really?
Know? Yeah, the torment of being the new kid on the block and not knowing any better. I forced myself to assimilate to American culture.
Oh,
regrettably, okay. I wish I still had it. My mom and my dad still have it. Most of my aunts and uncles.
Now, your parents, are they still in Florida?
Yep.
Okay,
South
and then
Florida.
Everybody else is still back in Jamaica?
No, everybody's all over, up and down the East Coast, overseas. I have family in Japan in the military. Ooh. I have family, and I have an uncle who's the wayward son who's in, I think he's in Australia now, but he's lived in New Guinea, he's lived all over the place.
That's pretty cool. What motivated your parents to come to the States?
I think just looking for a better lifestyle, you know, advancement, the American dream that most foreigners buy into.
Do you think your parents have found that in their own way?
I think they're happy that they came here. I'm happy. I'm certainly happy that they came here.
Mm-hmm. And what do they do?
My mom was a beautician for about 20 years. She had a beauty salon, which she sold and decided to go back to school. She had a successful beauty salon. She sold it and went back to school to get her master's, and now she's a psychologist.
Oh, wow. What about your dad?
He is, he works, well, my birth dad has passed. My stepdad, who I consider my dad also, is, he works, he's retired from American Express.
You said for a time that you lived in California and you ran a boutique entertainment firm called, was it Freedom?
Freedom Entertainment.
Freedom Entertainment. Can you fill in the gaps between you moving to Miami and starting school and starting Freedom Entertainment?
Yeah, so I went to through high school, through 2 years of art school, Art Institute of Fort Lauderdale in Florida. And then I moved to New York in 94. And just through my love, I was a performer. I was an MC back in the day. So wasn't the best at it. There were people that were better at it. I was more better at putting shows together and organizing and that kind of thing. So I kind of fell behind the scenes of the entertainment game. So I started that in New York. I just, my cousin worked for Atlantic Records at the time, and I had a lot of friends. I had friends that worked at Sony Music. So I started putting on showcases and working with artists that I just find and run into. You know, in New York, everybody wants to be a musician or an actor, a lot of people, so they're easy to find. So I just started putting on showcases, and I invited my family, my cousin from Atlantic and his people, and my friends from Sony Music and their people, and I had other friends at RCA Records. So I just started putting on showcases called Indigo's Underground Groovement in New York, and that was in the late 90s. And then I moved to L.A., and I wanted to do the same thing because, again, I had friends from New York who were now in L.A. producing. So I still had industry contacts, and I with a friend of mine who was a guitar player, actually Robin Thicke's guitar player.
Really?
We started putting on a showcase called Show and Groove in L.A., and I did that for a number of years. So I've always been a behind-the-scenes kind of guy.
So what's it like working in the entertainment industry? Because I think people get an idea of it from television and movies, and a lot of times people in those career paths, it's like either they get it completely right or they get it completely wrong. Like, in my experience, most of the time, TV shows get journalism super wrong. Like, these journalists, like, they got real nice suits, they live in nice apartments, and they're never worrying about money or anything, and that's not really the case,
right? So the music business, what I remember of it, it's been a minute, you know, it's very cliquey. It's a small family. There's few people that are successful that kind of run the whole game, as you may know, and it's hard to get a foothold in and succeed. I wouldn't say that I ever worked in the music industry. I was kind of on the periphery trying to support people who wanted to get into the music industry, and I had friends who were in the music industry, but I wouldn't say that I worked in it. And even the people that I know that were in it, are a lot of them aren't anymore. That's just how it is. It's always about the next artist, and also the next A&R guy that has the freshest air, who's kind of plugged into a scene right now. So it's always about next. You're very disposable.
Is that what happened with you, or did you get burnt out?
I decided to move. I kind of got burnt out. Most of my business was pressing up CDs and putting together press kits or some artist management, show booking and showcases. And I just decided to move back east and left all that behind, sold all my gear, sold all my duplication equipment, and came to Baltimore and to kind of see what was going on out here.
What motivated you to move to Baltimore and not back to New York?
Mostly housing prices. I came in 94, and during Artscape, actually. I came in 94 while traveling up and down the East Coast with some buddies of mine, searching for that almighty record deal, and stayed in Baltimore. We almost signed a deal in Baltimore in 94. And I liked it. I liked the city. I stayed one of my boys met some girl that lived in Mount Vernon where I currently live.
Yeah.
And she was paying $200 for this bad studio, like a two-floor studio with a loft on the cobblestone.
$200 in Mount Vernon?
But this was the 90s.
Yeah, 94. I was, I think, 3 years old or something.
Thank you for reminding me of my age. But, yeah, so I always remembered Mount Vernon, just how cool it looked. And when thinking I want to go back east, I thought of New York, been there, done that, way too expensive. Didn't want to go back to Florida, grew up there, over it. And I was like, Baltimore. Baltimore's kind of cool. I wonder what's going on there. So I started looking into it. Took a trip out here for a couple of days, looked around, and that was it. Decided to move.
Now, how does Mount Vernon look now compared to when you first came to Baltimore?
It looks the same. You know, I remember the historic architecture. That's really all I remembered. I remember the cheap rent. It's not so cheap anymore.
Yeah.
But the architecture remains, so I kind of like being in that environment.
Okay, cool. Now, how did you get hooked up with the Creative Alliance?
Yeah, so Creative Alliance was just a job. It was luck. It was fortune, really. I just looked in the city paper, and it was a job for a house manager. And I applied and got the phone call a couple interviews later, and they hired me. And I can't say it was pure luck, because all of the things I just spoke about, my show experience, I bartended a lot in L.A. and in New York. So I had about 10 years of bartending experience behind me, and just show organizing and comfort with artists and contracts and negotiations. I think I was the right fit for them as well. So I saw the ad in the paper, applied, and I got it. And 10 years later, here I am.
Can you talk a little bit about your career there?
Yeah, so I started as a house manager, mostly working the shows, managing the other event managers and the bartenders, the bar staff, and wasn't doing too much on the booking side. And a couple of years into it, I started booking shows. So I came up with the being Jamaican and being a fan of Bob. I developed the Soul Shakedown Party, which is still going. Started that in 2009. Just to celebrate Bob's birthday. It was something they did in Florida, and no one was doing it up here. So I came up with that concept. And
Soul Shakedown?
Yeah, Bob Marley's okay. birthday, Soul Shakedown Party.
Gotcha.
It's on his birthday, around his birthday weekend every year. So this year it was actually on his birthday, February 6th.
Oh, okay.
It was a big success. We actually had Junior Marvin, who was one of the guitar players with the Wailers, mm-hmm. came and played. So it was like full circle. So beyond that, my career, my position kind of grew into other things like operations, which is, managing the building and the facility and renting the building. So I kind of just built on what they hired me for and saw what needed to be done in other departments. And they kind of just kept piling on responsibility until I became operations director 10 years later.
Okay.
It's been a good time. It's been a great organization to work for.
Can you tell me any crazy stories about events or difficult people to work with? I mean, you're not the same by name, of course, but, you know, anything like that, any inexperience you've had that you don't think any other job would experience?
Well, I think I've gotten just to meet a whole host of artists here in Baltimore, you know, from the up and coming musician to the governor who has his Irish rock band, you know, think what you will about it. It's
wait, Larry Hogan?
No, the old governor, O'Malley.
Oh.
O'Malley's March.
Yeah, gotcha.
So, you know, you get to just meet all different types of people. I've met some greats, like Leah Gilmore, who's just a fantastic singer, and her son Jonathan Gilmore. I can't remember this lady's name. Old jazz, Ethel Ennis, fantastic Ethel Ennis, just a legend, jazz vocalist who I've got to meet and work with a couple times. Juno Marvin, you know, somebody that I idolized as a kid, mm-hmm. getting to meet him. It's all been interesting. The most memorable thing was, and I can't remember this lady's name, and I should know her name, but there was someone who was on stage.
And you tried talking to the mic.
And passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Had a stroke on stage.
What?
Yeah, and passed away that night or the next day, and I should remember her name.
She was a singer or something?
She was a singer, yeah. Legendary Baltimore singer.
The only one I can think of is Lady Day, but I don't know if it was her.
No, it was Ruby something.
I'll look that up.
We'll clear that up, yeah.
Okay, so you talked about meeting, you said Junior Marvin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as somebody from Jamaica, and you said that you idolized Bob Marley, what's your opinion of, I guess, reggae's influence on the world and how people associate reggae with just getting high and not really much else. Does it mean something different to people from Jamaica?
Well, I hope the perspective on reggae is changing these days. It's gone. It went dancehall for a while, which was a lot of slackness, as we call it, which means, you know, just probably your equivalent of booty music in the South, you know, in the States.
It's called slackness?
Slackness. Okay. Yeah, just that's immoral music. I talk about anything except, you know, right. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the immoral stuff. Go
the immoral stuff. But it's going back conscious. I feel with people like Taurus Riley and a lot of these Jacquior, a lot of these new singers, it's going back to a more conscious route, which is great. So I hope that perception that it's all about smoking weed and that kind of thing is in the past, because it's so much more. It's so much more. You can still find some good dancehall tunes, and just because I say it's slackness, I still like to get down to it sometimes. You know, like I like to get down to some down south stuff. But it's multidimensional. Reggae's worldwide, and it's in many different languages, and it's much more than pot smoking.
I also think that a lot of people, or many people, might not know the political nature of Jamaica, because they take politics super seriously down there. Mm-hmm. Do you think reggae came from that? Because I'll admit, I don't listen to too much reggae, but I have one of Damian Marley's CDs, mm-hmm. Welcome to Jam Rock, and a lot of it does talk about social problems and stuff like that in Jamaica and just the world over. Was reggae birthed from that, or was it something different, do you think?
I think reggae reports, just like hip-hop does, reports what's happening on the streets, you know, what's happening for the common people. So if you even go back to the 70s, when Bob and put himself in the middle of the PNP and the JLP, two political parties at the time who were battling and had their own gangs of supporters, and literally gangs, thugs, you know, representing them. And Bob called a truce and a peace concert to bring those sides together. It's always been reflective of what's happening in society. And I think all these new singers, Damian Marley or whoever, Jacquior or Taurus Riley or Luciano, they're all just reporting what's happening in the streets and the culture. Third world countries can be tricky. You know, there's the haves, there's the have-nots, and the haves want to keep what they have and not share what they have not. So you have also class struggles as well.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that as well. My girlfriend, she's half Nigerian. Her dad is, excuse me, her dad's from Nigeria. And she says that outside of America, like America is very much about race, but then a lot of other countries, it's more about class. Do you think that's true?
Well, yeah, because you have a majority African descent country, so race may not, although you still have, you know, some of the issues that we struggle with here with skin tone. You know, certain people, I have friends from Haiti, friends from Dominican Republic, and they experience the same things. The lighter you are, Brazil, mm-hmm. the lighter you are, the more, for some reason, we don't know, but for some reason, the more economically advanced you tend to be and your family tends to be. So it's the same thing in Jamaica, not to that great extent. As it is, it's really bad in Haiti. I know from talking to my friends and Dominican Republic, and just within those two countries who share a border,
yeah,
there are issues there. So Jamaica, I don't think it's so much about race. It's probably more about economics and the struggle. You know, poor. You're poor in Jamaica. You're really poor.
Oh, really?
Poor. Yeah. You're poor. I'm talking about living in a zinc house, if that. Mm-hmm. You know, with no running water.
Oh, well, speaking of that, have you ever seen the movie Shadows?
I think I did. It wasn't very good, was it?
Personally, no, not really. I just wanted to get your opinion of it, because I know how, like, people from Baltimore, we're constantly stuck with the wire whenever we go travel. So mm-hmm. what did you think of it? Outside of it not being good, like, did you think it was an unfair interpretation of your country?
To be honest, I don't remember that much about it. I just remember the acting was really bad. I remember the acting was really bad. And it probably had something to do with drug culture. And it seemed exaggerated. If I'm remembering it right, it seemed exaggerated. I don't know. You know, I didn't grow up in Baltimore. I'm not from the streets of Baltimore. So I didn't know how The Wire compared to what it's like to grow up here. But I didn't see that what we saw in Shatters. Right. I didn't see that. I didn't see all that. It's kind of exaggerated. You know, gotcha. Maybe it represents one section of Jamaican culture accurately, but that's not
the overall image of the island.
No.
So we talked a little bit about your time at the Creative Alliance, and you can talk about the cafe, right?
Yeah, the room.
Yeah, talk to me about the room.
So after being at Creative Alliance 10 years and, you know, having run their operations and events, staff and whatnot, I've decided to step out and kind of do something I've always wanted to do, which is open up a cafe / coffee shop / chill spot. Pretty much someplace that I'd want to hang out in. So I'm going to be opening up the room at 800 St. Paul Street in Mount Vernon, in my neighborhood, a couple blocks away from my house. And it's just going to be a chill place to get a sandwich, hold a local beer. We're going to focus heavily on local. Even in the decor, we've sourced local designers. I've used Cedar and Cotton. I think Raina has come in and done an interview with you.
Yeah, both Raina and Nasira.
Yeah, so they've done some. I actually just sent Raina a message to help me find some chairs last week. I'm sure she's working on. So even from that aspect, just the look of the place, I'm using local people that I come across who are really talented. And going to use local farms, city farms in the back of row houses to supply some of my produce. Mm-hmm. Local dairy for my cheese board. So it's heavily local and just really informal, chill spot to come and hold a drink, whatever your beverage choice is, whether it's coffee, a juice, fair trade. I'm going to try and source as much fair trade stuff as possible. And like I said, local beers and local wines. And
you mentioned fair trade. Is that something that's important to you? Like, where do you stand on the, I guess, spectrum of, you know, organic, non-GMO type stuff?
I believe in it. I think, you know, I can't say I'm a health nut and I seek it out at all times of my day, but I believe that if I'm going to put a product forward, it should be as healthy and contaminant-free as possible. And I feel like people, if we have a system set up where we can get the same product from someone that's making a fair wage, then why not do that?
You know, absolutely.
Why get it off the back of a truck just because it may be cheaper or more convenient? I think it just takes a little bit of work to find out those sources. I think they're out there and accessible.
Sure, absolutely. I don't know if you mentioned this. I'm sorry if you did. With the opening of the room, will you also offer a performance space?
So I would like to eventually. The situation in Mount Vernon, I think it's... they're very protective of that neighborhood, so you kind of have to go in and set up shop first and let them see who you are. I think they know who I am, but I think as far as having performance, the community's cautious about that. It's not a secret that I'd like to go there and have light performances and, literary events and maybe a comedy show. I'm friends with Michelle, the indie mom of comedy, so maybe have a comedy show here and there. It's not going to be a nightclub. It's not the vibe I'm going for. I wouldn't be in that location if I did. But
yeah, I don't think they would go for that either.
Yeah, exactly. So I would like to get there. It won't be one of the things that's happening right off the bat, though.
Sure.
I'd like to get in and establish myself and just figure out what I'm doing first.
Gotcha. Now, how can people find you or find the room online if they want to contact you?
So the website's theroom800.com. You could find us at theroom800 on Instagram and theroommountvernon on Facebook.
And what about you? Or do you just mostly use those?
Well, those that want to find me know how to find me already. You can find me through the room, though. We have a website. There's a contact page and a phone number. Anyone can reach out to me. I'm open to hearing ideas on events and working with people that may be doing interesting things. You know, I say I want to work with go-getters. It's right in the mission statement on the homepage of the website. So I'm about meeting go-getters and trying to figure out who I can work with in interesting ways. And maybe it's not in the context of the room. Maybe it's some other way. But I'm out of the getting out of the Creative Alliance where that's taking up all of my time. So I'd like to see what else is going on in Baltimore.
Local Color is written, edited, hosted, directed, and engineered by me, Jason V. Local Color's website was designed using the Morning WordPress theme, with website hosting provided by Skylar Newman. Media hosting is provided by Blueberry Podcasting. Visit blubrry.com to learn more. Local Color's theme music is by Dame Funk and was provided with permission by Stone's Throw Records. I'm Jason V, and I'll be back with more Local Color.